We're back now with J.M. Berger, co-author of ISIS, The State of Terror, this time to discuss media and ISIS from the other direction, its very own magazine, Dabiq. English language magazines promoting jihadism aren't new. They've been around since the Soviet-Afghan War of the 1980s. But like other elements of ISIS's propaganda arm, Dabiq is particularly slick.
They have now put out 12 issues, distributed online as a PDF. It looks like a commercial magazine. It is filled with often very canny articles about the state of their caliphate, sort of crafting the utopian image of the society they're building, while at the same time including a lot of threats against the West and the outside world.
Well, on the subject of freakoutability, it's called Dabiq because that is the site of the final apocalypse.
Yeah, Dabiq is a town in Syria where they expect an important battle in the apocalypse to take place. They will battle Rome on the hills of Dabiq. And one of the beheading videos from last year ended with Jihadi John saying, "We wait for you in Dabiq."
Is there any way that the very existence of Dabiq can help intelligence organizations track down the very people they want to keep their eye on?
Well, we can get some information out of it. I mean, ISIS is pretty careful about what information it gives away online. As with all of ISIS's propaganda and all of its social media activities, there's a balance between the intelligence we can get out of it versus the benefit that it has for ISIS. Dabiq is mostly benefit for ISIS, but occasionally you'll find something that might be actionable. But it's better for really kind of understanding their priorities and where they might be going next.
One of the things that struck me in Dabiq is a feature called In the Words of the Enemy. And people like me who have a news alert for their names on Google, which is a little pathetic, I grant you, it amuses me that even ISIS is concerned what people are saying about it.
ISIS is happy to show how much fear they can strike in their enemies and how much their enemies hate them. So a couple of months back, they featured a couple of American politicians, including Rick Santorum and a Virginia state senator who had said scary things about ISIS. And what was kind of shocking and appalling to me was they were like proud of this. So like these guys would send out tweets like, "Look, ISIS thinks I know what they're about, so I must know what they're about." I aspire not to be quoted in ISIS propaganda.
Mm-hmm. And you've succeeded till now.
A lot of my colleagues have ended up in the pages of In the Words of the Enemy. It's difficult to avoid saying something that they can twist around to their benefit. I've always tried to embed an insult anytime I talk about a positive capability they have. But, you know, I don't know if I can dodge that bullet forever.
Wait. You embed insults so that they can't use your quote. Now, this is an organization that has killed thousands of people in the most gruesome fashion and is pitiless. You think they're going to be more scrupulous than Hollywood is doing movie blurbs that they're going, "Oh my God, what are we going to do? He said this nice thing, but he put an insult in there. They'll cut the insult out, won't they, JM?"
I don't know. It's worked so far. I mean, you know, yeah, it's also kind of a game. You have to find a little bit of humor in this extremely grim subject when you can.
On the subject of what makes them feel like they're being glorified and what gets under their skin, there is also what we all call them. Some people say ISIS, others say ISIL, and still others say Daesh. ISIL and ISIS are acronyms for their name in English. Daesh is an acronym for their Arabic name, but is also deemed to be an insult. Why is that?
Well, you know, I've asked that question of a lot of Arabic speakers and never gotten a completely clear answer. Essentially, there's been some argument that it has some kind of scatological meaning or it has some kind of imputation of stupidity or it's just like a silly nonsense word that makes them uncomfortable. That's all well and good. I mean, I think there's been kind of this portentous embrace of the term by politicians and some of our military leaders. They think that they're like, "This is going to teach them. We're going to call them a name that they don't like." You know, a lot of this talk about the name is based on this idea that they can delegitimize them by not calling them the Islamic State. The problem is ISIS, ISIL, and Daesh all include the phrase Islamic State. So we're not really taking that away from them. I mean, if we call them a bunch of jerks, that would at least not have the phrase Islamic State embedded into it. I find it a little baffling.
I remember that George H.W. Bush in the first Iraq War insisted on calling Saddam Hussein Saddam, supposedly because he thought it would irritate the dictator. He did not immediately surrender power. There had to be some years of bombing and a ground invasion before he was dislodged.
Name-calling is not likely to dislodge the Islamic State. And in fact, this sort of very self-important reference to them as Daesh, I think, gives them kind of a special status. You know, the Aryan nations, we call them the Aryan nations. That's what they call themselves. It doesn't mean that we're legitimizing their claim that the United States should be an Aryan nation. So when we bend over backwards not to legitimize, I put in quotes, ISIS by using the name that it uses for itself, it's kind of condescending in a way. It's saying that Muslims around the world aren't going to be able to distinguish this group from a real Islamic State because they call themselves the Islamic State. And I think that's kind of absurd.
J.M., once again, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
J.M. Berger is co-author of ISIS, The State of Terror.
Coming up, how we had evolved in our ability to distinguish between Islam and terrorism, and how Congress proved this week the theory of devolution.
I think the worst of these zombie ideas shuffling back from their grave is this idea of a clash of civilization.
This is On the Media.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.